Welcome to How Fitting, the podcast for slow fashion designers and entrepreneurs about creating clothing and growing a business that fits your customer lifestyle and values. I'm your host, Allison Haynes. Do you want to get your designs to production without compromising your brand's fit, vision, or values? My pattern making services are tailored to help womenswear slow fashion brands do just that. You can learn more and book a free introduction call at howfittingpatterns.com to see if we'd be a good fit to work together. Now, on to the episode.
Today, I'm joined by Aista Zidnikita of Divinto. So, welcome to the show, Aista.
Thank you, Allison. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. For those listening who are meeting you for the first time, could you share a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Sure. So my name is Aista. I started and run a slow fashion brand called Divinto. It is run on a made-to-order business model. So everything is made when somebody orders the item. It's all made in my studio. I design everything in the studio. I pattern all the designs myself, and then cut and sew and everything right here in the shop. I work with sustainable fabrics as much as I can. I have a couple of suppliers that provide me with Ecotec certified fabrics, usually organic cotton, Tencel, bamboo, hemp, and sometimes there's a couple of variations depending on the season and the stuff. And I actually keep most of my collections online, even ones that I designed 10 years ago, as I try to design things that are kind of stand the test of time, more classic silhouettes, things that will have longevity in your closet, and things that you can mix and match and sort of dress up and down. Yeah. So that's the gist of it.
Yeah, I love it. And there's so many things I want to ask about, but you kind of brought up one of the things is that longevity. I know that's important to your brand. And I'd love to know, like, how does that value shape both your designs and kind of your business essentially? I mean, you know, you just mentioned that you keep your collections kind of online for years, for decades. Mm-hmm. But is there any other ways where the longevity really plays into how you run Divinto?
Yes, for sure. So when I started it, I kind of always knew at the forefront the sustainability would be important to me. And this was quite a while ago, about 12 years ago, when people still didn't really talk about it that much in fashion. So, I mean, that's part of like how I design in keeping with that in mind, that like I want to be able to have these pieces for a long time. So I tend to sort of gravitate towards more vintage sort of looking aesthetics, things that like still resonate with us now, even if like a lot of the looks might have come out like 30, 40, 50 years ago. So, and then I try to keep it relatively simple. I just try to find pieces that will look interesting, but simple at the same time so that they don't look dated over time. And things that, you know, like, you know, when I have a turtleneck, for example, that's like an item that everyone has. They've had it for a long time. It's never really going to go out of style. You can mix it with different, you know, you can get a different pair of jeans. Like, fashion does change and our tastes in fashion change. But certain things just kind of do stand the test of time. T-shirts and, you know, certain basics. So I just try to design basics, but more elevated basics that might seem have a little bit of interest.
Yeah, I wouldn't. So it's interesting that you describe your brand as basics, because when I was looking at it, that's not the first thing that came to mind, because it's not like your basic loungewear t-shirt. Like, it is more sculpted and more, there's more shaping and interesting details to it, but all in these cozy knits. Do you exclusively use knit fabrics?
Not exclusively. It actually started kind of as a necessity, because when I started the brand and I was researching sustainable fabrics, that's kind of what was coming up a lot. It was kind of jerseys and French terry and stuff like that. And so that's kind of what I had to work with. But also I started the brand as an online business. So I was starting it off as selling online. I was working from home at the beginning. And so just the knits, cut and sew knits and stretchy fabrics, it's just easier to fit more people. Like, and I actually do design with that in mind too. You know, like I have sleeves that like, you can roll over or kind of ruche at the you know, at the wrists, and same thing with leggings, you know, I call them stacked leggings if they like ruche up at the ankle. But I'm just thinking like some people might be taller and that is going to take care of like that extra length that you will need. But if you're shorter, I mean, it just means you have a little bit extra ruching. You know, same thing with the cuffs. Like I do like fold over cuffs. So if you need to fold them a little bit wider, you can, or make them a little shorter. Because I have long arms and that used to drive me crazy when sleeves were too short for me. So yeah, I think I mostly started with knits because it was just an easier fit, like to avoid just things not fitting very well for people. It just works better. And it just kind of stuck with it, I guess, because now because I carry a lot of these styles over the years and they still sell really well. So I just keep, you know, don't mess with the program kind of.
Yeah. That's a great reason to do that. Yeah. So you started your business over 12 years ago to bring kind of, you know, this different aesthetic to sustainable fashion. But I want to know, has your understanding of sustainability deepened or changed at all over the years that you've built this business around that?
That's a good question. Yes, I think it has evolved a lot. I mean, people's perception of it has evolved as well. Like I said before, when I first started it, there wasn't a lot out there. And what was out there was usually kind of like upcycled your work stuff, which is great, or sort of more like yoga gear, more like athletic stuff. I mean, which makes sense because I think at the time that's sort of like the customer that cared about sustainable fashion at all, because no one else really talked about it, was more of a person who's, you know, maybe more into yoga and, you know, eco-consciousness and that kind of thing. So yeah, I think at the time I was like, well, you know, I think the more options we give people, the more people will care about it, you know, because at the end of the day, people still buy clothes that they want to wear. They're not necessarily always thinking. I mean, most people aren't really thinking about how it's made, where it's made. So there's always like a conversation to be had about that. So I just wanted to provide like a different option at the time. And I think now it's just so different because it's almost at the forefront in like the big, even fast fashion's talking about sustainability, which is ironic.
Or at least their PR teams are.
Yes, exactly. So they recognize that that is an important thing for the consumer, which in the consumer has changed. So now that that is more at the forefront, I think the conversation changes a little bit more, not just whether you're sustainable, but how you're sustainable. And I think we all kind of agree that it's almost impossible to be completely sustainable as a business and as a fashion brand. So those are, yeah, my understanding of sustainability is a little bit different. I'm always just striving to figure out ways to do better. At the end of the day, I'm still making a new product. I'm not mass producing it. I am keeping a lot of my scraps. I'm trying to reuse them and donate them to other designers who kind of work with different aesthetics where they can use smaller scraps and smaller pieces. So, yeah, I think it's just more about understanding your impact a lot more.
So is that something that you've kind of leaned into more in your business over the years, is understanding that impact?
Yes, and sort of finding new ways to be better at it. And I mean, there's also more options now. You know, when I was looking for sustainable fabrics 10 years ago was maybe like, you know, I came across like two suppliers that had it, whereas now like a lot of even the more like mainstream fashion suppliers that you'll find in China do carry some sort of sustainable fabric, you know, so there's more options available. And so when there's more options, it gets easier to be better at it.
I want to dig into more the word better, because I hear this a lot from brands, you know, like they want to do better than the, you know, the rest of the industry, or they want to become better in their own business. But it can be, I think, a very abstract term. So for you, like, what does better mean for you in your business? And like, what are the criteria you're kind of looking at to know what the better options are?
Yes. So, you know, my model already as I said, I don't mass produce, so I don't sit on a lot of stock. Like the biggest thing for me, like the reason why I started the brand is because I worked in the industry and I just saw how much waste it produced. So, you know, because you're essentially guessing what's going to sell and you're guessing how much of that thing is going to sell. And a lot of times, I mean, we're wrong. We're just plain wrong. So I, you know, when I used to see that, like working in the industry, and my mom actually worked in the industry as well, I would see that a lot of the clothes, because even bigger brands, like even if they didn't sell something, they wouldn't even necessarily donate it or sell it off for cheap because it like devalued what was coming out. So they would literally like burn a lot of
stuff. It hurts me.
You know, the thought of someone working at this and making the stuff, and most of the time they weren't even making a living wage doing it, and then they don't even get to like get a piece of it. Like we'd rather burn it than donate it to the people who made it. It was really painful. So I think originally when I started that was like really important to me to know that like, okay, well, I'm not just gonna make a bunch of stuff and like let it sit there, even if I'm not burning it. Like I don't want to let it sit there. So I started it as a made-to-order business because I kind of have to get to take the guesswork out of it. You know, I make one sample, I photo shoot it and I post it up, and then I see what resonates with people. You know, it's just that one sample. And I mean, a lot of times it's not even the thing that my favorite things that I think are going to sell are usually not the ones that end up selling. So there goes to show, like, you can't always guess these kinds of things. When I say doing better, I mean, in that sense, like, I definitely don't think like I'm being wasteful, but I think even design wise, we can do better because over time now I can kind of see what does resonate with people more than I did when I started out. You know, when I started out, I was young and I loved fashion and I wanted to do really cool, unique, different things, but cool, unique, different things don't resonate with a lot of people. So if if it's a business and you're trying to make money, and the business has to be sustainable too, in a sense that like you need to be able to keep selling stuff so that you could keep making stuff. So I think design wise I can do better because I know like what resonates with people better, and in terms of like what stands the test of time longer too, like certain designs I know that I've been selling for, you know, since I launched and they're still selling. So it's like just learning those things, but also figuring out ways to use up my waste. You know, a lot of times I just like would, I feel bad throwing anything out. So I have bins and bins and bins of scraps. And it's really painful for me to just give it away. But like some stuff sometimes doesn't dawn on you until you like really are forced to think about it. So I had to move locations and I had all these bins of fabric and I was like, am I really going to move all this stuff to like a new location? I have like less storage there. So it sort of forces you to like rethink what you're doing. And then I literally just went on Facebook and I had all these people come and say, oh, you know, my grandmother makes this and she would love to get your scraps. So I had a designer who makes stuff out of little bitty pieces. So you find new, more resourceful ways to sort of get rid of some of your waste. And I think it's just constantly being better. I mean, is like just constantly reevaluating and revisiting what you're doing and how you're doing it and whether there's like new ways to be more responsible.
Yeah, I love that. And it's so cool about that you just like reached out on Facebook to see who could use the scraps. I save all like my sample making scraps as well. And I recently donated them to a designer friend of mine who has this really cool process of like stitching back together, kind of quilting back together, like even tiny, tiny scraps into new textiles. And it's just so cool to think about, one, not only, okay, how can I eliminate having scraps in the first place as much as possible? But then with those scraps, how can they have a second life so that the fabric isn't being wasted? And yeah, I love how kind of seeing that in your studio and seeing like, okay, I have these bins. What am I going to do with this that is going to allow them to, you know, be around and sustain even longer rather than being thrown away?
Yeah, rather than seeing them in a landfill in the end, you know. I did have a lady who had a studio down the street from me who used to make rugs out of old materials. So that was like a great partnership, because I was giving her like a consistent type of fabric and a consistent colorway. And so she was able to make rugs out of that, which was really cool. She moved away. I lost that contact. But I feel like there's always somebody that comes up that can find other creative, because, like, you know, we don't all live in a vacuum, and there's people who have like ideas that you would have never thought of, you know. And I have some ideas too how to use it. I just like literally don't have the time to be able to do, like, some of this stuff is like really time consuming, like taking work, you know.
Yeah. So that's another thing you wanted to ask about, is you're doing so much in your brand, from like design to marketing, pattern making, production, and you know, also researching new ways to, you know, improve your brand and do better. How do you kind of split your time between all of those areas in your business? Like, can you break down what a typical day or like week looks like for you?
Yeah. So it's not easy. As you can imagine, a one-woman show, so there's a lot going on in the brain. But yeah, usually, I mean, I wake up and I usually check my emails and respond to like the more pressing and important ones and make notes for other ones. And then I go into the studio. I usually have a schedule already written out. I usually write a schedule Friday for my for the week following, based on like what orders I have and the timelines of when I have to ship them. So I have a 2-week window for between when the order gets placed and when it gets shipped. So all my customers know, like, you'll get it within 2 weeks. So then I have to write out a schedule to make sure that everything is shipped in a timely manner. So then I just kind of follow that schedule once I get to the shop. You know, usually there's like, one day is usually a lot of the cutting process for the orders, and then the next day is we'll be sewing, and then it depends on the colorways. Sometimes I'm like, okay, I'll do all the black ones on Tuesday, all the tie-dyes on Wednesday, that kind of stuff. And then usually evenings is kind of like where I tackle my social media and marketing stuff if I'm not too exhausted and tired. Sometimes it does happen where I have to skip a couple of those because there'll be like other stuff going on. But usually that's an evening activity for me. And then, you know, it all depends on like how full the schedule is based on like orders and stuff. I do get clients that come in. So the schedules do get thrown off a lot because sometimes you get interrupted and people come in. They love to chat when you're in the studio. So you lose sometimes like even a full hour in the day just chatting with people. But yeah, that's kind of usually the rundown of how my week works. And there is times where you get behind and you have to catch up, and that means there is plenty of days where I stay late at the shop and work into the evening. You know, I'll go have dinner with my husband and then go back into the studio. Luckily, I don't live too far from where my studio is, so it's like a 5-minute drive. So when I do feel a little overwhelmed and I feel like I need to catch up, I do go back in the evening and catch up on my sewing.
Yeah, so it sounds like you kind of batch your tasks a little bit so that you have like a sewing day and a cutting day and, or, you know, times of the day that you're working on different things. So I bet that does help. So I know you started your business online, but then you do, it sounds like, have clients or customers that like will come to your studio. So what does kind of your breakdown of how you sell your pieces look like nowadays?
A little bit of everything. So I do sell, I think most, I would say 50% I sell online through my own website or on Etsy. I do sell on Etsy as well. And then I do work with some local boutiques where they order small batches from me.
So like wholesaling to them?
Yes. So that one is easier for me to plan around because, you know, they'll tell me when they want it delivered and we kind of discuss the timelines and I figure out what makes sense and what's doable for me. And so it's easier to plan that way. And then the walk-ins are like the least I mean, the most unpredictable. In the summer, for sure, I live on Cape Cod. It's a summer destination, vacation people. It gets busier. And I do get a lot of custom orders actually in the summer because women come in and they want like, oh, I need a dress for a wedding or a mother of the bride dress. So I actually do quite a bit of custom stuff in the summer. And going into fall, there is a lot of weddings here on the Cape too. It's also like a good wedding destination. So that keeps me busy through the summer and fall. So I do keep quite a bit of stock now in the studio. I used to never really do that until I realized people like to come in and try stuff on. So now I have a little bit more stock on hand for people to try on and just kind of see the different styles and the different silhouettes a little bit. And then once in a while, you have people come in and they'll buy like a bunch of stuff. So you're like, oh, wow, guess I need to restock. But yeah, in the winter, it's a little bit different just because it's so much quieter here. So I don't necessarily have as much stock in the winter in the studio, but I do like a supplement my time towards teaching. I do some sewing classes here. So it's actually like better that it's not as crowded in the studio with clothing because I can fit more people to like do sewing classes with me. So yeah, it's a little bit of a breakdown of like, I think for the most part, I do sell online, but yeah, there is some boutiques that carry my things and walk-ins and clients that reach out to me.
So with the custom pieces, are those like your designs that you're just kind of tweaking something or making it special for them? Or is this like fully custom where they come with the design they want and it's kind of outside of your usual line?
It's both. There is a lot of custom stuff I do where people come in and they're like, I just really want a dress and I can't find anything I like. And we kind of sit down and kind of design something together based on like what they show me, what they would like. And then, yeah, that usually requires me to do a little bit of fabric sourcing too, because it's not usually necessarily fabrics I work with. Because like, yeah, someone wants like a mother of the bride dress, I'm probably not going to make it out of Jersey, you know? So yeah, there that happens. But as I said, I usually only take those on when I know I have the time to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that could take a lot of time.
Yes, it could be time consuming. There's like numerous fittings and then like trying to find, because sometimes they're like, well, I want it this color. I'm like, oh. When you're buying something just for one dress, it's a lot harder. You know, I'm like, you're not going to necessarily go to a wholesaler to look for specific colors and fabrics and stuff. So you just try to see what's available out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's really cool how you kind of built your business around the like seasonality of where you live too. It's like the changing from, okay, more stock in the summer and maybe more kind of these in-person, you know, clients dropping by, and then the winter more room for like teaching. And that's like the opposite seasons of when the walk-in traffic is busy. So I love that you've kind of made that work for like your unique location.
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, these things kind of happen just organically, just because, you know, when winters would come and I'm like, okay, well, nobody's buying anything and no one's coming in, so I got to do something. So yeah, sometimes it's just like an answer to a problem that happens.
Yeah, I'm also curious with Etsy. So how long have you been selling on Etsy and what has your experience been kind of doing, you know, selling there versus also selling on your own website?
I've been on it actually since the very beginning. So like 12 years. I actually launched my Etsy store while I was still living in Montreal in Canada. And I would say for anyone who's starting out, it's really like a waiting game. Like it takes a long time to build your audience to make yourself relevant. Because I would say for the first maybe 3 or 4 years, it was like I would sell, I don't know, like one item once in a while, kind of like, oh, wow, I made a sale. Like you really couldn't rely on it. But yeah, I think it's all about like how much you engage on there and how you list your products. And like really, they give you a lot of tags to use, and you really should use like all the tags. It, like gives you like 12 options, like 14 options. Like just try to figure out as many ways as possible to describe this item in the tags, because that helps a lot in like the algorithm of it showing up. for people who are searching. So once you actually get in the rhythm of that and you eventually start to build like a customer base, now I am selling there, like I probably sell, I don't know, 10 to 12 items a week, which is pretty good.
Yeah.
It is a good, as I said, it takes time to like build it. But once you're there, it is a good platform. People do find you. A lot of people find you. And it's almost like a good platform to even sell. Like I've had a lot of customers who like eventually switched over to my website because my website might not show up as fast like in the Google search, but the Etsy listings show up pretty fast in Google search. If Etsy likes you, you're going to show up more in the searches. So eventually if you build it up, so I got to a point where I was able to get a star seller status. And once that happens, you definitely do show up in the searches a lot more often. And they like share some of your listings on their promotional pages, as well as I feel like in Google searches, your listings will show up on Etsy as well. So my experience has been good with it. I know it was definitely a slow start. You have to be patient with it. You have to just keep at it. And the more things you put up there, I mean, that was the other thing is like, because I keep a lot of the styles that I make, like you eventually build like a much bigger library and they do like that as well. I think on Etsy, like if you have more products
on there,
if you only have like six, it might be harder to show up in the searches and stuff.
Interesting. Yeah, those are all great tips. Thanks for sharing. Because I know a lot of designers some designers that I talk to, they're like, do I list on Etsy? Do I like create my own website? Like, which is the better route to go? You know, it's hard to know because it's very dependent on the brand. And it's like your website, you have more control. But then on Etsy, you maybe have more visibility, but you're kind of beholden to, you know, some fees or, you know, their algorithm. But it sounds like you've really been able to like grow your customers on Etsy itself, but also kind of transfer that loyalty like beyond Etsy even to your own website.
Yeah, I mean, I took it as an approach like the more places you are, the better, because you'll reach more people. Like not everyone is gonna necessarily find you on your website. And vice versa, like not everyone goes to Etsy. So like just try to reach as many markets as possible. I was a little bit reticent at first to be on Etsy just because, I was worried that I'd be like lost in the shuffle. You know, there's a lot out there and, you know, you might not like the way that it's laid out or the aesthetic of it. But at the end of the day, for me right now, I feel like it's definitely a good way to reach an audience. So I just stick with it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's really great. I'm glad it has worked out for you over the years. What made you, in like the early years when it maybe wasn't working as well, what made you like stick with it kind of long term? Because that's quite the investment if it took like kind of 3 or 4 years to really start getting these results.
Well, the thing is, it really doesn't cost that much to put a listing up. I think a listing is like 12 cents per listing. And then they only take a cut if you sell something. And the cut is pretty minimal, too. It's like 3% or something.
I know that's not bad
numbers. But it's really not. Like, once you list things, there's not really that much to lose. You know, it's not like a big investment. So it's kind of worth it just to test it out and see how it goes. You know what I mean? And I stuck with it because I knew someone else who told me that. They said, it takes time. And like, you really have to like go in there and it's like helps that you engage with others too. Like, so if you have a profile, you might have obviously your store profile, but then you have like your own personal profile. Like it helps if you go and you like other people's stuff. Like you kind of have to like engage a little bit and try to find similar things that you sell and kind of, I don't know why, but somebody told me that. So I did that. I like just would go, you know, like almost treat it like an Instagram page where you go and you like see products, you like products and you like, yeah. And it somehow it just helps to like generate your stuff in there, gets like mixed in with what's coming out. So somebody told me that, and they're like, just stick with it and you'll see. And it doesn't take that much effort. It doesn't take a lot of money. That's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's even cheaper than like having your own website, because
yeah,
you're just like, you create an account and, you know, you put some listings up. The listings are very, like I said, I think it's like 12 cents or something, 15 cents per listing. So it's worth it in that sense.
Yeah, definitely. It sounds like it. So yeah, I know it sounds like Etsy is a little bit social media-like. And I know we were chatting about this earlier, both kind of the pressures of social media and the benefits. What has worked for you and your business on social media, and what things maybe haven't worked as well?
Yeah, good question. So I think creating a community has worked, sort of building a base. And I think for the most part for me, when I first started using, I mean, I mostly started with Instagram just because it's fashion design and people are like visually interested in that kind of stuff more so. So at the beginning, when I first launched the brand, I feel like I think that was before like Facebook bought Instagram. So the algorithm was very different. And I feel like as long as you posted a lot, you would show up in a lot of things, because it was more like based on like how often you were posting. So that helped me build a base a little bit better that way. I think it's a little bit harder now, especially if you have a brand account. Like if you have a personal account, I think you show up more. But as a brand, I feel like it's built where they kind of want you to boost your posts and like advertise. So that part doesn't work for me great. I think sometimes like my engagement went down a lot after Facebook bought it. So it's just always having to try to figure out how to, you know, please the algorithm, kind of. And I always feel like I'm behind on it. Like I there's so much other stuff going on in this business that like social media kind of, like I feel like I'm never ahead. Like when I finally figure out like how things work, they change it. It'll be like something new. Like I was like, I feel I got the hang of Instagram, and they're like, oh, everyone's on TikTok now. I'm like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like you're constantly having to like learn and relearn. And again, it's like revisiting. It's like running a business is constantly revisiting like what you're doing and how you're doing it, and whether there's a better way to do it. So yeah, I mean, I kind of started using TikTok a little bit for that, because I do see that like I get a lot more views on TikTok from like, you don't even really have to have followers. Like if you just have good hashtags and videos are interesting, you'll get a lot of views. But it's just so much harder to do a video, I find, than just like posting a picture. It just takes a lot more work and effort to make it look good. And I'm like, oh, this is so much more time consuming. But yeah, I mean, there's resources for that. I think that's one of the things that I'm reconsidering as well. It's how to outsource it. I think I mentioned earlier, I did get a grant to have someone run it for me. And that was amazing. Yeah. I had it for a year and I loved it. And it kind of made me a little bit lazy about it when I had to go back to do it myself again. But you do learn a lot if like you do have a chance or the resources to at least do it for a few months, just to learn from the professionals, like how they do it. It is helpful, because you can kind of see the tricks of the trades a little bit, and what, you know, as the algorithms change and like the process of using social media changes, like it's good to sort of revisit with people who do it for a living, because then you can kind of learn what to do differently and what has changed and what you can do the same still. But I mean, in terms of like sales, it's not great, but I think it does. I mean, once I have certain people, there's certain people that always, you know, check out my posts. And so that helps, because, you know, so as I was noticing the other day, I'm like, oh, I posted something on a tie-dye dress, and all of a sudden all these people started buying tie-dye dresses. I'm like, okay, people are paying attention. Sometimes you feel like you're yelling into the void sometimes and no one is listening or watching or seeing what you do, but then you do get your reassurances eventually.
Yeah, I love that it, at least, even though it's a lot of work, that you're seeing some payoff from it. And that was a great point you brought up about kind of learning from the professionals, like even if it's for a short time, but just to pick up some of those tips to maybe make some of these things like social media easier for you to then handle afterwards. You at least have some kind of confidence of like, here's the formula, here's what I need to focus on, you know, so that you don't feel like, oh, I need to do it all. It's like you can choose the things that are working and you know kind of how to optimize those as best as you can with the time that you have.
Yeah. And the professionals give you tools, you know, they kind of like, okay, here's like, they kind of give you like a drawing board and like just fill in the blanks, you know, so it does help instead of trying to figure it out all on your own.
Mm-hmm.
It's just faster to have someone show you how to do it.
Yeah. And speaking of kind of learning, I know you also, and you mentioned earlier, do some teaching too at a local trade school. With that, like, what made you, like, why is it important to you to train and mentor the next generation of fashion professionals? What got you into that role?
Yeah. So I just noticed there was a lot of kids in my area who really were like, and parents were reaching out to me like, oh, would you ever teach sewing classes? Like, there's all these people who were interested. And so I had been thinking about it for a while. I do love teaching. So during the pandemic, a lot of the schools needed substitute teachers. So I did actually do substitute teaching a couple of times. And the school kind of reached out to me and said, well, maybe perhaps you'd want to teach a sewing class. And I, of course, I was like, of course, I would love to do that. It is important because I feel like a lot of the newer generations just don't know how to sew anymore. And when I was growing up, we had to learn that in school. And I think it's an important skill to have, like, even if it's just like, oh, I need to hem a pair of pants, or if we want to really keep our clothes for a long time. You know, I grew up in Lithuania, so we actually didn't have a lot of clothes at our disposal when I was growing up. Like, it was the Soviet Union and you couldn't just go shopping for clothes. Like, a lot of people just like made their own clothes and kept them and passed them down to their kids. Like, I still have items that my mom used to wear when she was in her teenager in her 20s, and I still have some of those clothes. And I think, like, if we really want to have true sustainability, like, we need to bring that back, like, that, like, relationship to our clothing, and how to keep it longer. And so, you know, mending is a thing, and being able to, like, put a button back on is a thing. So I think it's like part of sustainability for me to be able to teach kids how to sew. And there's a lot of the newer generation actually does want to learn. They're interested in it. There's always so many kids, like, I can't even take on as many kids as I want to, because I'm only alone and there's so many resources you can take on. But it was important to me, and I love that I get to do it, because maybe not everyone else who teaches sewing would talk about it, but like, I love talking about sustainability and why that's important in fashion. So I've had quite a lot of students who ended up studying fashion design. They went to New York, they went to fashion schools in New York, and they still write to me, and they're like, wow, it's just wanted to say that it was so great to have learned some of this early on, so that I felt way more prepared at the school, and that, you know, I kind of knew a little bit about, like, background on what that means in fashion sustainability and and eco-consciousness and all of that. So I think if you start them young, then that's what they're going to start thinking about as they get older and as they go to school and pursue their careers, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. Like, do you see, like, for these students, what is kind of the main reason why they're interested in career in fashion? Like, are they interested in the sustainability aspect or learning to sew and kind of the trade of that? Or is it more like design focused and, you know, maybe the typical like glamour Project Runway type of allure of fashion?
Yeah, I think it usually starts off as like, well, I really like fashion and wearing cool stuff. So I think a lot of the kids do start off from that desire, just kind of like wanting to do something in fashion, which is great. That's why I think it's important to have these conversations when they do start learning and like the sewing and the how much, like, I think a lot of them don't even realize when they start sewing, like, wow, this is like a skill that like takes a lot of effort. Like how much work goes into a garment. Like, I think a lot of them don't realize. And then when they see that, like, it's like you get a new appreciation for the clothes that you do wear. I mean, not just kids. Like I have students in the winter. I have, even older ladies who are wanting to learn how to sew, and they're even surprised sometimes how much work goes into it. Like, oh my God, I went back to my closet and I looked all the stuff and I was like, oh my God, that was really hard work that someone did. I'm like, yeah, see, you learn how to appreciate the things that you wear more. And I think as in anything, when your mom makes this big extravagant meal for Christmas, you never understood how hard she worked until you had to do it yourself, right? So
yeah, definitely. Yeah, so that's interesting that it was like the love of fashion, but then they learn to like love fashion in a different way, like appreciate the craft of it, not just mm-hmm. the like self-expression aspect through working with you. I think that's a really powerful perspective to have on clothing, to kind of appreciate what goes into it and the hands that made it.
Yes, exactly. And that's the reason why I really love teaching and teaching younger kids as well, because it's maybe not something they would learn until they actually decided to go to fashion school. Some of them might not even have decided to go to fashion school, maybe. I mean, there is a few who change their minds. They're like, this is too hard. I don't want to do this. But at least they can get a better understanding of like what happens when you buy a piece of clothing, like what goes, all the stuff that goes beyond just like what you're buying, mm-hmm. how it got there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. So switching topics a little bit, can you share about a time when your business has felt most aligned with your values? And what made it so?
Okay, that's a good question. Well, I would say, I mean, I feel like it's always felt pretty aligned with my values. Because I feel like I started my business because of my values. It was like an answer to what I was seeing in the industry that I found problematic when I was working in it. So, yeah, the reason why I started was because it was like painful for me to know that much waste was happening in fashion. So in that sense, it's always been aligned with my values. And I also just like, it also pained me to know that there was people who were literally risking their lives to make clothing. So I actually talk about that a lot. Sometimes my family's tired of hearing about it because I bring it up all the time whenever someone buys something from fast fashion. And I realize that we all do sometimes, like it's impossible to just buy everything ethically. Yeah, I think it's something that I like to make aware of to as many people as possible. And the way I run my business, I kind of talk about it a lot, even though I try not to be like, oh, I am a sustainable fashion brand. Like, I want people to just like the clothes that I'm making, because that's kind of how you get people first. And then you can kind of be like, oh, by the way, these are things that are also important for me when I'm making the clothes. And it's important for me to know that, even as I grow and I feel like I'm going to need help to produce my items, I want to make sure that like people who work on those things, and that I do get seamstresses who help me, I want to make sure that they're getting fair pay for what they do, because I know how much work it takes to sew a garment. So, I think that, I know it's a business at the end of the day and it still has to make money, but I feel like I always gonna put that as one of the most important parts of my business, is to make sure that my values are not compromised.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's the goal, at least, that's my goal. And I know a lot of the listeners as well, is to be able to run their business in a way that doesn't compromise their values. Have you ever faced a difficult decision in regards to your values Like, has there ever been a time where you're like, ooh, this is going to be like, I know what I want to do, but it's going to be really challenging to make this work, either time-wise or finances or whatever it is. And like, how did you handle that decision?
Well, so I think maybe this before I even started my brand, when I did work for a company, just learning some of the ways that things were made. It was like an outerwear company, and I learned about how the leather is made in Pakistan and how it's dyed and how it does affect the people who work in that industry over there, and how little regulation there was and how sick people were getting. And I think that was like a moment where I was like, as much as like this job is so cool, like I don't know if I wanted to be part of that whole system. So that's was like a decision where I was like, okay, well, I think I just need to go and do this on my own in a different way. And I realized like it takes so, it's not even to like say these people are bad or whatever, because, you know, we all kind of get caught up in the way things work. This is just how it's always been, you know, that's what people say. So it's
too difficult to do it a different way. Like,
right.
No one's perfect, or
exactly
us doing it a better way will make a big difference in the grand scheme of things. Yeah.
Right.
It's like exactly. all those excuses, the responses. Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I think it's just like knowing consciously, I was like, okay, well, I don't think I want to do this for that much longer. Like, it's just because I'm aware of these things now, and like, you know, I have to find a new way. So yeah, I think that would be the time. In the end, I think that was like the best thing that could have happened to me, because it like forced me to start Demento. So
nice.
It was like a positive thing in the end.
Yeah. Yeah. So did you kind of immediately leave that job after that kind of experience learning the working conditions, or was that just kind of
the process? Of course, I had thought about it. I'm like, yeah, well, this is a job. It's in fashion. It's like in the kind of fashion I like to do, like a lot of. It was like a good few, probably a good career path. But yeah, I think with a little bit of thinking, it probably took a couple months until I left. But you know, you all have to figure out like your game plan.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, what was your plan then?
I ended up going back to work at a restaurant and started my brand while I was doing that.
Nice. Yeah, but how did that feel then once you were like, had moved beyond that job? Were you kind of relieved, or you're like, yes, this is the right decision?
No, I definitely doubted it. I mean, I think sometimes you have moments where like, well, was this the right thing? Like, what am I doing? How can I, like, it's hard, like running a brand is hard, and it didn't make me money for a long time, and it still doesn't make me that much money. I'm always struggling. You know, with time, I always kind of realize like I'm more of a DIY person anyways. Like, I think in the end, I probably wouldn't have been happy, and I'm a lot happier doing what I do, even though I have to work probably way harder and make way less money. But sometimes, again, that's maybe it's important to some people, I don't know, but like that's like not the most important thing for me. Like, I obviously, it's nice to be financially stable, and but I also want to be happy in what I do and proud of what I'm doing, and I have that, and that makes, you know, that makes me happy.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you, like, despite the challenges, that you are happy with that decision and the choice to, you know, do your own thing and follow your values, and also teach, you know, other people about what it's like, you know, working in fashion and the sustainable, you know, impact that it has, or not a sustainable impact. Yeah. So do you think that kind of the challenge to like make money and, you know, to not, you know, be overworked working in fashion or sustainable fashion is always going to be a trade-off? Or like, what do you think it would take the industry or take for, you know, having a sustainable fashion business to pay well, to, you know, have a better work-life balance?
I think a lot of it is up to the consumer, I'd hate to say, but I think if more people understood what goes into making clothing and like cared about those things and valued it better, I think more people would be willing to buy like more smaller brands and local brands. I think the problem with fast fashion is that it devalued clothing. And so I don't know if that's really ever going to change anytime soon. People just didn't buy as much clothing like 30, 40 years ago. Like people invested, like people went to tailors to get their clothing made still. That was like a thing. Like my mother-in-law is like, oh, in the 70s, like I still went to a tailor and be like, make me a suit, you know? And so I think like ever since like fast fashion came around, and I think, you know, it was normal to be like, yeah, it's going to be $100 to buy a dress or whatever. And even back in the day when the prices were different. But I think now people just expect a dress to be $20, you know, mm-hmm. And that's the problem. I think until we change that mindset, like the consumer mindset a little bit. And don't get me wrong. Like I want fashion to be accessible and affordable to a lot to people. Mm-hmm. You know, we can't all, but I think, you know, I was growing up, we didn't have a lot of money, but we just didn't wear as many things. Like we like saved up money to buy the nice thing and mm-hmm. to have it for a long time and to, you know, to mend it and to fix it and to pass it down. So I think it's just the way we see clothing and the way we value clothing that has to change. For us to be able to actually make a decent living off of it. I don't know. Like, it's like people come to me sometimes and they're like, oh my God, I don't know, $200 for a dress. I'm like, did you spend that last night at dinner? I bet you did. You know, and most of the time they're like, yeah, it's true, I did. I'm like, yeah. And do you have anything to show for it? Like, yes, you have a good experience and delicious food. But at the end of the day, like this dress you might have for much longer than like how much you had that dinner. So
good point.
Yeah. So I think it's just like changing people's perceptions and understanding that clothing should not be that cheap. Like when I see a t-shirt that's like $5, it makes me question like, why? Why is it that cheap? Like there's something went wrong there. Somebody's getting screwed, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Another zero on the end of that.
Yeah, exactly. So you're just like, what, you know? So I think if people understood that, like that something, I think they do with like with food, it's kind of come across a little bit now. They're like, oh, if you see a whole chicken and it's like 20 cents, you're like, why is it 20?
Yeah.
what's wrong
yeah,
you know, where has it been and what has it like, why? And I think we need to start doing the same thing with clothing, just to understand that that's like not okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's a skill and it takes a lot of effort to make a piece of garment, you know.
Yeah. And I think too, you know, a harmful thing about fast fashion and like consumer mindset is, yeah, a $200 dress is expensive if you're going to only wear it once, but it's not expensive if you're going to wear, you know, a lot of times. And so
yeah,
like the mindset, you know, we have in kind of our culture nowadays is that clothing is kind of like a wear once, post it once, mm-hmm. and get rid of it. Like you
disposable.
Can't, same thing versus, you know, a piece that is like cherished and, you know, becomes like a signature part of your like personality or your wardrobe, you know. And so that, I think that's another piece of it too, you know, along with everything you mentioned of not only valuing clothing more, but being okay with repeating the clothing, you know, having yeah. less clothing and wearing it more often, mm-hmm. and that being like socially acceptable to like wear the same evening dress more yeah. than one occasion.
And that's just, it's so funny you say that, because that was a norm for me when I was growing up in Soviet Union in Lithuania. Our teacher used to wear the same damn dress for like a week or two, even sometimes, until it was time to wash it. And it was normal. Like it wasn't out of the norm and it wasn't like weird and no one made fun of you for doing it. And then I moved to Canada and it was like, if you wear the same outfit the next day, like they're like, what'd you do? How come you weren't
out all night? Yeah.
Yeah. Like you haven't bathed? Like what happened? And I'm like, what? That's odd. And I get it. Like we want to express ourselves. Like I'm the first person who's like, oh, I love to dress up and like you know, express myself and do. There is a feeling you get when you put on a piece of clothing, you know, it makes you feel a certain way. So, you know, I encourage that. But at the same time, yes, I think it's okay to be able to, I mean, that's kind of like what I want people to do, like buy a piece of clothing and figure out a way to wear it in more than one way. So, you know, you can wear that same dress in so many different ways. It's all about how you style it. Like there's ways to get creative around it, you know, and just that gives me an idea. Like maybe we do a post, you wear one dress for the whole week in different ways, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Well, Aista, this has been really great to chat with you and hear more about your brand, Devinto, and what goes into making the clothing. I have one last question that I ask everyone at the end of the interview, which is if you could communicate just one value to the world through the clothes you design, what would it be?
Yes. Well, I would say that, I mean, I'm going to go back to like my point I just made now, like finding versatility in like a simple design. I always try to design in a way where simple does not equal plain or boring, you know, try to design in a way where I can make something that seems clean and elegant and rather simple, but still interesting and versatile so that you can wear it in more than one way. So going back to like what I just said, like find that one dress and like, ooh, if you put on a jean jacket and flats and you can run to the grocery store, but then you could put on heels and pearls and go to a cocktail party mm-hmm. with the same dress. So just being more creative with the clothes you already have. So I try to design in a way where you have to buy less and make more out of like the few pieces that you have.
Yeah, longevity of style and design.
Exactly. Yes.
Well, this has been great. Where can people find out more about you and Devinto online?
Yes. So you can go to my website at www.devinto.net. And you can find me on Instagram at Devinto Design. You can find me on TikTok at Devinto Design and at Facebook at Devinto Design. And you can, if you need to reach out and talk to me, you can write me an email at info@devinto.net.
Perfect. I'll put links to those in the show notes. And thank you again for joining me today. This has been so fun.
Thank you, Allison. It's been a pleasure.
That's all for today. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend. And if you would like more episodes and resources like this about growing a fashion business that fits your customer lifestyle and values, sent right to your inbox, you can sign up for the How Fitting newsletter at howfittingpatterns.com/newsletter or at the link in the show notes. Again, thank you for listening, and I hope you'll join me again for the next episode of How Fitting.